Hello, and welcome to the New To Knitting Podcast. I'm your host, Kaylee, and I have an extra special guest today, and we're going to talk about knitting. That's right. Today, I interviewed the ultimate yarn boss lady. She started her own yarn store 20 years ago after a career in software engineering. She has turned her yarn store slash coffee cart into a multi-brand business, including names such as Madeline Tosh, Della Q, Namaste, and of course, Jimmy Beans Wool. That's right. I got to talk with co-founder and CEO of Jimmy Beans Wool, Laura Zander. She was a class act to get to interview, and I know you'll enjoy her very down-to-earth vibe and her emphasis on caring on her community. The community of yarn crafters, fellow yarn store owners, and her over 70 employees. So take a listen to this interview now. Welcome to the New to Knitting Podcast, Laura Zander. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great. I'm doing really well. Thank you. Yeah. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. I can't complain. So you are the CEO, co-founder of Jimmy Beans Wool, right?
Yeah.
How did that get started? How did you start the business?
So my husband and I lived in San Francisco. We had both moved there to become software engineers. We were software engineers. And this was like in the last century. So like 97, 98. Yeah. And I learned how to knit. I walked by a yarn shop and was so like, I had learned how to crochet a couple years earlier and would do, you know, blankets. I bought yarn from Walmart. And so would use a lot of Red Heart and stuff. But I went into a knitting store and I had no idea that this whole world even existed, you know, that you could make sweaters and, you know, that it was very fashion based, super intimidating, like unbelievably intimidating. But I just sucked it up and I signed up for a class immediately. So I took this class, learned how to knit, and then Doug and I, my husband, we decided to move from San Francisco up to the Lake Tahoe area up in the mountains because we were just like mountain biking and skiing and, you know, we just wanted to live this like mountain life. So we moved up here and I started building websites. I continued my software career and I was building, I teamed up with a graphic designer and built websites for small businesses. And there was a woman who hand-dyed yarn that lived about an hour away. And long story short, I built the website for her and she convinced me. And my software business wasn't going super well. This was in the year 2001. It was okay, but I was in the barter club. So I was like trading for eggs and, you know, like I'll wash your windows if you make me a website and that kind of thing. So I built a site for someone who made yarn and I built a site for someone who made espresso carts. So those carts, those big carts that you'll see at like football games.
Oh yeah.
And they both said they would trade me. So, and the woman who made yarn was like, you should open a yarn shop. I'm like, no way. Like, how do you can't make a living in yarn. You know, there's no way. And she's like, let me introduce you to a couple of people that have made a good living, you know, hawking yarn or designing. And so I met these women who one still has a shop, you know, her shop still exists. And the other one is this prolific pattern designer. And they kind of tutored me and taught me, you know, how to open up a yarn shop. I came home and I told Doug, we should open a yarn shop. He's like, okay. So we took our life savings and bought some more yarn, bought some fixtures, opened a shop. And then this was in 2002. So I had about a 500 square foot store and half of it was coffee, which is what we actually thought was going to work because we were in a touristy area downtown. And then the other half was yarn. And it's so funny because I was a new knitter. Like this woman that became my mentor, I had her phone number 530-587-2445. Like I dialed that number about 10 times a day. And I'm like, how do you do a 3-needle bind off? How do you do this? Like these customers all knew more than I did. But I just was like, don't know. I learned, you know, don't know, but I'll find out. So did that, launched a website because we were software engineers and that was 20 years ago.
Wow.
So I know.
Yeah, I know. The business has grown so much in 20 years. But going back, because our show is called New to Knitting, And yeah. something I talk a lot about is just trying to make it accessible to new knitters is mistakes that we've made in the past. Has there been any kind of, you know, knitting mistake that you made or that you learned from or early on that was just, you know, disastrous?
Oh, totally. Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Like so many. And I tell you, you know, as someone who has an engineering brain, I guess, apparently, I can tend to, and is a little OCD, a little ADHD, I got lots of D's, you know, I before I started knitting, I could get really caught up in the details and being a perfectionist and making sure that everything was right. And at some point in my knitting, I found that it wasn't fun, you know, because I was trying to make every stitch like perfectly in line and regular, you know, with the other stitches in that row. And it really cured me because I was like, okay, am I doing this to create the perfect garment? Because if that's the case, I can just go buy something. Or am I doing this because it's really fun, you know, and I like picking out the colors and I like making something. So if I like making something, I just got to let go of the mistakes. So, I mean, the very first scarf that I made, I'll never forget, brown sheen worsted, you know, and this gray, and it was seed stitch, and I ripped it out like 6 times. And it was, I mean, it's like ripping your heart out.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, oh my God, I spent 3 hours working on this, and that's 3 hours down the tube. And, you know, it's very Buddhist, you know, you really have to learn not to be attached to it and, you know, to learn that it's about the process, it's not about the finished product.
Oh, I love that. So, that's like such great advice to a new knitter, you know, to enjoy the process. Don't get caught up on those mistakes and don't let it keep you, you know, from stopping or enjoying the craft by any means.
I call them, you know, I'm like, they're my signatures, right? So in fact, I made a baby blanket for a friend and we just put it up on our project log, right? So we took pictures of it on our website. And if you look at it, you can see there's a line where I did the wrong thing, you know, for one row. And it's so visible, like it just screams at me, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, do I take it out? You know, it's 240 stitches or something like that across. Like, I'm like, this baby's going to puke on this thing anyway. Like, is anybody really going to notice other than me? And I'll call it a design element. You know, if people notice, I'm like, oh, I put a stripe in there so you could measure how much she's growing and you can tell based on how tall she is compared to the stripe, right?
I love that. I had this quilt that my like great grandma had made when I was, you know, we just had it at our house. And one of the squares, she had the fabric turned upside down on accident, had just like sewn it wrong, you know?
Yep.
And I've heard this term, and I don't know if it's something my mom made up or if it's a real quilting term, called like God's eye or something. It was just like you leave a mistake in it. And that's okay, you know, and it's just 100%. Like part of it. And then my, like, as a little girl, I was always drawn to this fabric flipped upside down, wondering like, what color is it? Or, you know, and I was just enjoyed it all the more. Who knows?
Totally.
Why, you know, because of it, which is weird.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't expect.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, who wants to marry Brad Pitt? Like, you know, it's just boring. Perfection is boring.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
yeah. That's so funny.
Oh, he's actually from Missouri, isn't he?
He is, Springfield, Missouri. Yeah. We know all the celebrities that are from around here, St. Louis. St. Louis has got a whole bunch of them, but
yeah.
Anyways, but so 20 years ago, you start Jeremy Bean's Wool. You've grown so much. You've acquired or have new brands. I mean, tell me, what is it like now?
You know, it's so different than it was. Just so different. I mean, in some ways it's the same, you know, and after being, it's not just, I don't know. It's like, it's not just the brand that has grown. So we have a lot more space. We have about 20,000 square feet. We were able to, we just bought a building. So we're actually like settled because we've basically moved every 5 years. So we've been in multiple different places. So we were able to take advantage of an SBA loan last year and get a space that's a permanent space, and it feels really, really good. You know, we have a big staff now. We've got about 70 people between Madeline Tosh. We've got Della Q. We're doing some kind of in-house brands. We've We've patented things. We've done, you know, we've got smart sticks. We've got a patent on that. We've got inventions, you know, this, we've all these collaborations. So from the outside, you know, it's that funny, like overnight success, you know, in 20 years, the 20 year overnight success, you know, I mean, it's 20 years, right? Like, so not only has the business changed, but like I've changed, we have a kid now, you know, I mean, we grew a kid, So I've changed, Doug's changed. We're just, you know, we're kind of different people than we were 20 years ago. But at the core, it's the same thing. I mean, we still, the majority of the people that work for us love to knit, you know, and that's what they're passionate about. And that's the way it's always been. You know, usually we hire our customers, people who come in, and we do, it's almost all like promote from within. Like we've all just grown into our positions. So we just kind of take on more and take on different things. So it's been, it's kind of a playground, you know, to be able to try new things. I mean, we acquired Delacq and Namaste a couple of years ago, but that's it sounds really fancy, and it's but it's a lot less fancy than that. You know, when you're in it and you're breathing, it's like knitting. You know, in the beginning, it's very intimidating, and you look at something that somebody's made, and you think, oh my God, there's no way I could do that. Well, once you've been doing it for 20 years, you look at it, and you're like, oh, that's easy. And that actually happens to me all the time with knitting, because I see these like fancy Fair Isle sweaters, and I'm like, never. Like, there's no way I could do that. And the girls, you know, the women that I work with that make these, they're like, oh, it's easy. I'm like, it's easy for you, you know, because that's, you've been doing it for 20 or 30 or 40 years and you love it. So it's kind of the same thing with the business, you know, I mean, it's been 20 years. So we kind of are where we should be.
Yeah, that's great. And it's just so encouraging too, because in my St. Louis area, we've had in the last couple of years, like several local yarn shops close, but you've been growing in this time. And so you, are you still just at one location and then you have the big warehouse and lots of online sales, right? So is the bulk of your business all online and through your website?
It is. I mean, well, kind of. So now we did grow because we purchased Madeline Tosh, which is down in Texas. So we have a we have 30,000 square feet down there. We have a factory, and mostly women. We have three guys that work there. So all these women are dyeing yarn and packaging yarn and, you know, labeling it and everything. So the majority of that business is actually wholesale. So it's two other local yarn shops, which is, that's what kind of, that's the beauty of having been in the business for 20 years and having grown it, is now I get to do all these collaborations and these things that before, when we were smaller, we just didn't have, we didn't have the scale, you know, to be able to do this stuff. So, and what I mean by that is, like with Madeline Tosh, it's mostly wholesale, which means I now get to work with all of the local yarn shops, you know, or a lot of the local yarn shops in the country. And that is a whole new fun world for me, because I get to work. My customers now are fellow business owners, you know, so as opposed to, you know, the first 17 years of the business, my customers were fellow knitters. And now I get a new customer base that I get to learn from and collaborate with and, you know, help figure out how to make their businesses successful. Like, what can we do to make them successful so they don't close?
Yeah.
You know, can we provide good product and good support? But then on in the on the Reno side of things in Nevada, about a big percentage, 90-some percentage of our, actually, maybe not as much anymore, but a big, huge percentage is online sales. But we have a phenomenal retail store, like really cool. And we also wholesale Delacq and wholesale some other things. So, yeah.
Cool. I love that. Did you guys have to pivot very much during this pandemic? I mean, you were set up for success, I would think, just with the online part working already. But so how did you pivot?
You know, the big pivot, it's interesting because the online part, as you mentioned, was already set up. And so that did really well. But, you know, we had multiple retreats lined up that we had to cancel and return all the money. And, you know, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then our retail store, we ended up closing it for about 10 months. You know, our employees, we put it to a vote, you know, and they really wanted to keep it closed and they wanted exposure to a minimum. So we decided to do that. And then on the Texas side, on the Madeline Tosh side, you know, we suffered, I guess, but we had to pivot because most of our customers were yarn shops and a lot of those yarn shops were closed. So sales were really low. So figuring out, you know, how do you pay people even though you don't have sales? And not penalizing the people that work for you because of something like this. So that was, so the pivot in a lot of ways, you know, we didn't have to pivot a tremendous amount because we already had a strong online presence. Where we really had to pivot was like our financial models and figuring out, you know, how do we make sure that people have are 6 feet apart or 10 feet apart or 12 feet apart, and how do we do multiple shifts so that you have fewer people in the warehouse at the same time? And, you know, it was that side of things that was perhaps a little bit different than, you know, it would have been 20 years ago when it was just me working in the shop.
Yeah, that's interesting. That makes a lot of sense. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, from researching you, like you, it seems to me you're very relationship oriented, because I read and heard from other interviews that you knew the people who had owned like Delacue, and you knew the woman who you built the website for yarn, who you know, just building all these things from relationships. And then I see that now translated in the way you're running it, you know, even in these like hard past 2 years of like taking care of your employees and, you know, that relationship aspect of it, as well as keeping the business going, you know, which is, I think, cool.
Yeah. What's knitting and crochet? I mean, like, if it's not about the people, like, what's it about? You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because, you know, I struggle sometimes. There are other brands out there that are much larger than ours and, you know, really focus on price point and discounting. And we just have never gone that direction. Like, we would rather have really in it, like, we would rather put our energy, we'd rather make less money and put our energy into creating new things, you know, like the train case behind you. You know, and we want to just have fun, and we want the people that we work with to have fun. I mean, because we're all creatives. So that's, I mean, I think that's what drives us. And that's the long-term approach. It's not about, I don't know, it's just about quality of life. And again, it's, you know, it's like we were kind of talking about, it's about the process. It's not about the end result.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. And as a creative who's a business owner, I imagine it would be hard to still find time to knit. Do you still knit much?
No. I mean, yes and no. Not as much as some of the people that I work with. Again, you know, we have a 13-year-old son, and choosing and wanting to spend time with him. So, and we don't watch a ton of TV. You know, we're pretty outdoorsy and kind of active and travel. I travel a lot. So I go in waves. You know, right now I have 3 or 4 projects that I'm working on. I have one here, right here as well, but I don't put in the hours that everybody else seems to.
Definitely phases of life, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me too, as having younger kids, you know. I don't knit as much as I would like to, or even did 5 years ago when they were babies. Somehow, who knew I had more time then than I do now? I don't know.
Exactly. I mean, if I could knit and drive, that would be helpful.
Yeah, very much. So what's getting you excited about the knitting industry then now?
I think the collaborations, you know, and the relationships. It's just, and the techniques, and, you know, there's just, and maybe the pandemic, I'm guessing that the pandemic really helped. And I think it helped, you know, if you look at retail, you know, you look at all the different kinds of industries, right? So if you look at beauty products, you know, or fashion, I mean, it's just and music, right? I mean, how many songs out there, right, are so-and-so with so-and-so? you know, I like to pretend that, you know, we kind of started that trend years and years ago. I'll just tell myself that, but it's really cool that that has become kind of mainstream and normal for people to work together, because in our industry, that was really hard 10 years ago to get people to work together, because there was just this kind of competitive, you know, one pie, we can't all share it attitude. And so to me, that's really the exciting part, is that, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, and that we all need each other, you
That's
know?
so true. So what's so I have in front of me yarn from Hedgehog Fibers that I'm
You got
knitting.
it.
I got it. Look, I'm doing my first brioche ever. That
Are
fun
you using both
together?
of the different
I
colors?
am.
Oh, that is genius. I've been thinking about doing brioche. I was in Texas at Madeline Tosh last week. My son and I went, and I picked out some colors. And I'm like, I want to do brioche because I just think that would be so cool.
Yeah, I think it's super
Oh.
fun, and adding, like, I tend to be very neutral. And so
Yeah,
I've
me
been
too.
talking to my neighbor knits too, and she knits like very colorfully. I was like, I need some more color in my life. And then I got this, and I was like, look, it's kind of a small step into brighter
Yes.
colors
Yeah,
because
yeah.
the
It's
one
like
side is just
colorful
blue.
neutral.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
So tell me
Ah.
about this collaboration with Hedgehog Fibers. How did that start?
Yeah. So Beata, I met who started Hedgehog. She owns and runs that. I actually, speaking of collaboration, a couple years ago, there's a big trade show that happens in Europe. So I went and I sent Beata a note. I'm like, hey, I'm going to be in Cork, Ireland. You know, who knew, right? Do you know, are you going to be around for lunch or something? So, and then I sent Amy from La Bienne a note, and I'm like, hey, I'm going to be in Paris, you know, any chance, you know, and obviously I just like planned these days, because I wanted to collaborate and I wanted to see like, what can we do together? Like, how can we create some win-win situations? So met Beata, totally on board to collaborate. And then we bought Madeline Tosh. And so she was actually the first person that I called to tell. And I was like, hey, we bought Tosh. Like, I think that there's an opportunity here for us to prove to the world and show the world that two competitors, you know, in quotes, could, if they work together, we could actually really benefit the industry. We could show the world that, you know, we can work together really well and that it could be win-win, and maybe we could kind of set a precedent. So 2 years ago, we engaged my friend Melanie Berg, who lives in Germany, to do a design with both of our yarns. And then Beata called about 6 months, 9 months ago or so, and said, here, hey, I have an idea. How about for the next level of collaboration? She's like, we have this Tweedy yarn. So they have been collecting all of their scraps for years and years and years. And they've been shredded. So they shredded all these scraps, these yarn scraps that they have. And they shredded them and they gave them to the mill. And the mill blended those scraps into a yarn. And they call it Tweedy. Right. So it's like the ultimate kind of upcycled product. So she's like, why don't you send us your scraps and we'll blend it into our yarn? And then we'll have like a Madeline Tosh slash Hedgehog upcycled, like fun thing. So what's so neat about it? So we were like, yes, absolutely. That sounds great. It's dyed by the mill. So we could only do two colors as opposed to, you know, both Hedgehog and Madeline Tosh are hand dyed typically. So it's a little bit different in that way. So it's got the blue and the yellow. We have those two different colors. But what's been really fun is like, as I knit something out of it the other day, and, you know, every time one of these little colors, these pops of color, these tweed pops up, I'm like, ooh. I think Ramona dyed that one. Ooh, I think Karina dyed that one. Oh, I think Gabina, that's Gabina's color, you know? And it's like the most cool, kind of intimate personal experience to know that each one of these little pops, like, you know, was dyed by this woman in Fort Worth, Texas that we know. And, you know, or maybe we developed the color, or I don't know. It's just been really like how fun.
Yeah, I love that. See, you're bringing the relationship back into it. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And for
Yeah.
me,
It's,
it's just fun to watch these colors like pop
yeah.
up, you know, in hot pink and blue and all these other things. So it's
Yep.
been very fun to knit with for sure. And I
Oh,
agree.
yay.
I love that idea of collaborating, you know, to helping the industry grow and not being competitive in that way. So I think that's super cool.
But, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take a ton of your time anymore. But I do want you to plug, you know, for all these people who are new to knitting, maybe they've, you know, this is their first time even hearing about Jimmy Bean's Wool or Madeline Tosh, you know, because a lot of people, you know, maybe they just started at Hobby Lobby and Joann's.
Yep.
So tell them, how can they find you and your brands and online and all of that?
Sure. So our brands, you can find us at jimmybeanswool.com, and that, you know, we carry Madeline Tosh there. We carry Della Q, which are the project bags that we make and we've created and invented. You can find us at madelinetosh.com. You can find Madeline Tosh Yarns, you know, at hundreds of local yarn shops, independently run local yarn shops across the country. And Tweedy specifically, this hedgehog yarn, is available at 9 different stores throughout the country. So we, again, collaboration. Mm-hmm. We reached out as kind of a pilot. So we reached out to 9 of our shops and said, hey, do you guys want to buy a little bit of this? Like, we're not making any money off of it because we just said, you just go buy it directly from Hedgehog. So Beata's making some money off of it. And we thought it would just be a great way for, I mean, it's just a great kind of revenue generator if you want to get business-y about it. And it's something new and interesting, one-time limited edition that could help boost some sales for these shops, you know, during the summer and during the fall. So hopefully, you know, I think a couple of them have almost sold out, which is pretty exciting. You know, if I can, because I was a new knitter, I mean, obviously we all are a new knitter at some point, right? Mm-hmm. But I learned how to knit when I was in my 20s, in my mid-20s, versus a lot of people who, you know, kind of come into it through family. And I totally 100% and I'm a tomboy. So walking into, you know, this like frilly, girly yarn shop that can be a little snooty and intimidating, you know, mm-hmm. I have been there. And I think that kind of drives our business some, you know, that experience that I've had is we don't want people to feel like that and want them to recognize like everybody belongs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one thing for those listeners who really have mostly shopped at Hobby Lobby or Joann's or Walmart, which is where almost all of us started, I would just throw out there that, you know, it took me a little while to understand when you walk into an independently run yarn shop, which is really a boutique, that, you know, the price, the sticker shock can be pretty enormous. You know, you look at a skein of Madeline Tosh or this Tweedy and you see it's $30 or $35 and you're like, what, you know, for a freaking ball of like fur, you know, that's just crazy. And I really had to change my mindset and think about it in terms of, and decide when am I going to, there's always going to be a time to spend $2 or $3 for a ball of yarn at Hobby Lobby. You know, if you're going to make something for your mother-in-law, that's probably the time. But if you're going to make something for somebody you like, then maybe that's going to be an heirloom or it's something that's going to take you 3 or 4 or 8 hours. You know, when you think about the math, you want to do it, you know, it's worth investing in sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. And offsetting. Something like this Tweedy, as an example, it's got a ton of yardage. Yes, it's expensive. But if you're going to spend hours and hours and hours, if you think about it per hour, it's cheaper than a movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's obviously cheaper than golf. It's way cheaper than therapy. So for us, it's almost about like setting a budget, like, okay, I'm going to spend $100 a month on my hobby, you know, and sometimes that means I'm going to buy a huge bag full of acrylic, you know, or lower price stuff. There are some really great brands that are more affordable. And sometimes I'm going to spend it on just a couple of hanks of something super luxurious, but, you know, just recognizing that just because you go into a shop and everything could seem really expensive doesn't mean you're supposed to buy expensive stuff all the time. It just means there's a range, you know?
That's so true. And I think as, you know, when new knitters get more experience, you know, they start to realize, oh gosh, this acrylic didn't wear the way I wanted it to. Maybe it didn't drape the way I wanted it to. And as you get better and better at your craft, you know, and you start to want to use, you know, better yarn tools. Better tools. And I think, you know, there's always that point to where you want to make that jump from, okay, maybe I'm ready for something a little nicer. You know, maybe I'm ready to try the 100% wool or, you know, all the different kinds of wool and other fibers as well. So,
totally.
You know,
So, sorry, tangent.
It's okay.
Passionate about it though, because, you know, we've all been there.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It's definitely true. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here and coming onto my podcast. I appreciate it so much. And I know everybody's going to enjoy hearing from you, the pro from Jimmy Bean's Wool and Madeline Tosh and all those other brands. So, thanks again for coming.
Yeah, thanks for spending time with me.
Well, thanks for listening. As always, you can find me at New to Knitting Podcast on Instagram, and you can find all the links and show notes at our website, newtoknittingpodcast.com, and you can always find me on Ravelry as Kay Beth, or find my designs on my designer page as Kaylee Kirkland. That's all I got. Bye.